Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Five Fatal Flaws of Business Intelligence Projects. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Please be advised that this conference is being recorded today, the 24th of July, 2007. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Neil McMurtry. Thank you, sir. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, good evening, and good morning, depending on wherever you are. My name is Neil McMurtry. I'm a research director in business intelligence for Gartner. We'll spend about 30-35 minutes today in the formal presentation and in questions and answers, as long as you care to make them. Business intelligence is one of those areas that when we talk to CIOs, they tell us that it's a key initiative in 2007 and beyond. It's an area where market trends are indicating high levels of demand, where vendors are making a lot of noise. But let me take you back some time. June 15th, 1815, a British bank had organized a very complex infrastructure to gather data. It had developed a system of complex interactions between its various resources in order to create an environment where it could capture very, very critical data. The infrastructure consisted of highly trained riders and horses, and their sole intent was to capture a single piece of data. That data was two words, Wellington 1. And what it referred to was the Battle of Waterloo. Those two words created a significant British and European, in fact, global financial institution in the form of Rothschild's Bank, which some of you may have known. So the notion of the criticality of information to businesses and in that context, by the way, that single piece of information allowed that particular bank to dominate the stock market at the time and to create a significant financial base that stood its good stead for probably 100 years or so. So the notion of using information in a competitive sense to drive better performance, to achieve competitive advantage, is not new. What we have, and perhaps to explain my prejudice, is that over the last 20 years, enterprises like yourselves have spent a great deal of money typically on applications like ERP, on CRM, on supply chain, and other specific vertical industry applications, largely around processing. In other words, how do we create more efficiency in terms of how we manage our business and so forth. And at various times through that have been attempts to extract information and actually take that data that we've been very effective at creating and turn it into something that we can use. So what we're going to talk about today is our experiences passed through our customers and clients of, you know, what's working and what's not. And so I'm going to indicate, for those of you who have the presentation in front of you, when we change slides, but we're going to talk about what we call the five fatal flaws and what you might do about it. Now, flaws have a sense of failure associated with them, but the reality is with BI, like anything else, the issue is not that your projects might fail completely, but they fail necessarily to extract all the benefits that might actually be available. So if you could go to the first slide, please, and you'll have to excuse the flippancy of this, but the biggest fatal flaw is thinking that there are only five fatal flaws. We've identified seven, and we'll go through them in some order of, I guess, criticality and priority in this stack, starting from the bottom. My particular background and interest and experience is focused on the interrelationship between business and IT, and a lot of the issues that we're going to talk about, and I know that the audience today is largely IT people, is the effective engagement of business people within the BI, because if we think about this notion of business intelligence and look at the terminology, it is about the business, and it's about using what we do have, that we've created a great deal of, spent a great deal of money and effort on creating, about how do we run the business better and how do we extract value out of the IT investments that we've typically made as a business over the last 10, 15, 20 years. So if we go into slide 3, which is key issues, what we're going to address are what are these fatal flaws that we've identified. As you'll see in the next set, following slides, you'll see on the left-hand side, I guess, an ideal sense of what you would do to remain flawless, and on the right-hand side, what we call been there, done that, which are some perhaps more tactical things, because you know, we do need to balance the ideal with what's practical and what's achievable in your own environments. So we'll go through those flaws in those sort of contexts. So if we go to slide 3, which is the one entitled number 1, if we build it, they will come. And the issue, and I hardly need to repeat it to the IT professionals, but there's two competing forces here. There's a requirement from the business that they simply throw requirements over the wall and say, we need to know more about our business, you know, implement this BI project, deliver this thing to us, just go and do it. There is also the issue from good IT organizations where, you know, you want to be out there, you know, helping the business, not simply reacting to their requirements, but actually leading them down a certain path. But we know for certainty that that business intelligence initiatives like ERP, like CRM before that, require business leadership and business ownership at least as strongly as with IT. It is not simply an issue of taking a requirement and throwing it over the wall. You know, we can see symptoms of that in the sense that, yes, we'll go and develop a data warehouse from an IT point of view, and hopefully the business will understand the value of that. Sometimes we see environments where, you know, brutally, you know, there's more years invested in the project than there are in the number of users. Symptomatic of this problem might be the fact that the executive sponsor leaves, that there is no, you know, truly strong business ownership of it, and often, more often than not, when you see this type of issue, it's that the information fails what we call the RACT test, and we'll talk about that in the next slide. So notwithstanding the fact that business is demanding an answer, the business also has a responsibility to get involved, and you will see from other research that we've done and advice that we publish, the building of things like a business intelligence competence center, the business intelligence frameworks that we have and develop, you know, are processes and tools to help you engage the business in becoming proper partners and drivers of this business intelligence initiative. And I think it's interesting that, you know, these are not lessons that are new to us. We know it from ERP. For those of you who've been involved in those sorts of implementations where ERP turned into just a technical or essentially an automation of existing processes, where there was sometimes minimal, you know, redesign of business process. We saw it again in the CRM wave. Where there was a lot of focus on, you know, technical implementations, but sometimes not a lot of real business ownership. And it's a risk that we are seeing in the field in business intelligence, where it's seen as something that IT does in terms of implementing a tool. And our advice and position is clearly that it is not. If you go to the next slide, which is slide... let me see. It's if we build it, they will come. Slide 4. Okay. So what do we do about it? Think about data and information. What we call the RACT test. Relevance. the information to be and the initiative to be useful, it has to be relevant. So relevant has a couple of perspectives on it. It has to be appropriate, and this is a really important word. In other words, you can't create relevance out of nothing. The issue is it relevant to the decisions that have to be made by the people receiving that information? And a second aspect of it, are they able, from an organisational perspective, to do anything with it? There's simply no point in having BI initiatives that push information out to people who can't actually do anything with it or for whom it is not relevant in terms of their decision making. It clearly has to be accurate. I mean, one of the issues that end users constantly push back on is, well, I don't believe the information. So lack of accuracy provides an excuse not to use the information. And it has to be precise as well. There's a clear requirement that it be consistent, that if I take one view of an organisation from a product point of view, that it be consistent with the view if I take a geographic perspective. So consistency, irrespective of the source or irrespective of the form in which I get that data, is truly critical. And it has to be the same results across multiple tools, whatever they are, and across the different applications. And the final issue about RACT is it has to be timely. There's no point in having late data. There's no point in having data that's too early. It has to be at the right time. And I think in an overriding sense too, you know, if we're looking at BI initiatives, there's, you know, as human beings, the people who are actually doing things with the data, our capacity for managing volume of data has not increased in line with the capacity of the technology to deliver information to us. So I think one of the other aspects of the initiative from an information point of view is it's almost an issue of there has to be just enough data or information. In other words, just enough relevant to the decision that is being made or the business process that is being supported. So in terms of the sort of the ideal world, our recommendation clearly is to look at something like our business intelligence framework to make sure that the proper business case. We'll talk about costs later and about whether, you know, the free, in inverted commas, data warehouse BI solution from your enterprise apps vendor is truly free. But business intelligence is an area where it's actually possible to gain competitive advantage and market advantage through the proper application of information and data. But it requires money to do it. It's not simply a little bit of wallpaper over the top of your existing applications. It does require a business case. It requires some serious thought to do it. We have a framework that will help you do that. It has to be user-led. And again, we talk about, and have research around the notion of building business cases around what we've talked about in terms of RACT. The whole issue of information and data in an organization is highly political. We know the notions of islands of information. We know the notion of information is power, and these are realities in organisations. Information is very sensitive. It relates to how people or business units perform. So there are always politics associated with business intelligence initiatives, and that's just a reality that we have to deal with. And our approach of a business intelligence competence centre, our approach of engagement of business intelligence from a strategy perspective down, it won't answer those questions, but it will help address some of them. And finally, particularly for the IT people, is that when you're looking at something like business intelligence, it is by definition tends to be an enterprise-wide sort of initiative. It is going to require, it is threatening to people who hold information. It is political. It may well require change. Certainly we see in business intelligence moving from pure reporting into building BI into business process to make more business processes more effective and so forth. One of the things that IT organisations generally have been fairly poor at, in our perspective, is that they don't market, they don't understand the market marketing requirement needed to internally sell projects, and not simply sell the business case, but selling business change, because a lot of what we're talking about here is selling business change. And so that, you know, I've seen situations where IT has gone to corporate marketing to, you know, create formal marketing plans for IT initiatives, and I think that's a very interesting and sensible approach, you know, to recognise the fact that that as IT professionals, we know that doesn't matter how good the technology is, you know, that the business has to either own it or at least respond to it in a positive way. Otherwise, you know, the expenditure and effort is largely wasted. So marketing is not something that IT professionals do particularly well, but in terms of increasing the effectiveness of BI projects, you need to think about, you know, how you actually sell it internally, and keep that sort of drive going. So over to the right-hand side, you know, let's deal with, you know, we've dealt with the perfect world. You're involved in BI initiatives now, some of you. You know, perhaps have a look at them, compare them to the Gartner BI framework and see where, if they're not working as well as they should be, what you think might be missing. You know, is it the disconnect between the project and the overall business strategy? Are the performance metrics being sought not right? You know, is the infrastructure really right? So use the framework from a gap analysis perspective. Have a think about what you've actually done. I mean, we see projects in our clients sometimes that really need to be killed. There's often a sense of, gee, we spent so much money on it, we can't afford to let it go. But our view is that you really have to take a much more aggressive view of that, particularly from a BI perspective, because by definition, you're trying to deliver value to the business in an environment where there is constant change. You know, ERP is largely internally focused. Things fundamentally don't change a lot. Whereas when you're talking about BI initiatives, you know, you are dealing with a business that is in whatever industry you're in, be it government, banking, manufacturing, in whatever region, you know, the external change drivers are really, really, really constant. And it may simply be that a current project is simply not worth pursuing. It's easy for us to say, but it's certainly a strong piece of advice to consider whether an initiative needs to be killed. It may have been, you know, involved a certain amount of sunk cost, but, you know, get over it and move on. Another tactical piece of advice is what we call the BI Competency Centre. We've written extensively about it, and I would urge you to have a look at that. It's a virtual vehicle for making sure that you do have the engagement of the right set of skills between business, between IT. It also helps build up business intelligence as a competency within the organisation, which I'm going to talk a little bit later. You know, it's not simply a technical competency, but it's about, you know, how well does your organisation actually use information, both in terms of internal efficiency and in terms of external engagement with customers, competition, markets, partners, and so forth. It may be that, you know, in a short term, and you have the capacity within IT to, you know, to bludgeon users into using it, but that's a very, very, you know, a weapon, if you like, that has to be used very carefully. And sometimes you may simply not have enough money allocated to it, but again, you know, these are tactical responses. Okay, if we move on to the next fatal flaw, which is slide five, managers need to dance with the numbers. And this is very, very hard, and it goes to the issue of the way in which individuals behave and which organisations are structured, that most managers, when they're presenting data out of corporate information systems and so forth, always want to have the ability to explain, to adjust, to excuse or to justify why the numbers are the way they are. The old adage that I mentioned before, information is power. Information in particularly in most organisations is really critical. It's how people are measured. So this is a difficult area, and it's something that just reiterates the need for a proper BI strategy connected to the overall business strategy, because it goes to the issue of whether information is an individual manager asset or whether it's a corporate asset. If you allow the culture and the thinking to continue that information is owned individually as opposed to a corporate asset, then this will continue to be a problem. Having said that, it's not easily overcome. We've seen, for example, in CRM, where companies try to implement Salesforce automation type modules, where they try to get salespeople to, put information about their prospects, about activities, about their leads and so forth into corporate systems. There's often a great deal of individual resistance to that sort of activity, largely on the basis that there has not been an established culture and position that type of information is actually an asset of the corporation. And to some extent, there's no easy way around this because, organisations need to take the perspective that if you think about a piece of data that's been collected, be it about a customer or on a transaction or inventory or competition, it's taken money to develop, it requires storage, it requires management, yet many organisations we go into, you might find a piece of information that could have taken $100, $200, $500, $1,000, $2,000 or $3,000 to collect and to manage and to store and to manipulate, yet it's not treated with anywhere near like the discipline that a $20 office chair is treated with. So there's part of the key to this, and it's part of IT's role, is to keep pushing this notion of information as an asset, and an asset in accounting terms that is something that has been expensed, that requires ownership and guardianship and exploitation in order to extract a return on that asset. So, again, symptoms of that, do you have the right numbers? Sometimes we see there's a pretty poor sense of accountability that managers are allowed to explain their way around things. Data might exist in islands, and sometimes symptomatic might be, the fact that there is always the scramble at the end of the week or the month or the quarter, depending on how, time-driven your organisation is. To gather information, and it's quite interesting to really consider the amount of effort that many organisations go to simply to get the numbers together. So you need to think about whether that's true for you. So if we move on to next slide six, so how do you deal with this? It's an area, frankly, where there is some requirement for the big stick. In other words, there may need to be compliance pressure to build the case against spreadsheets. And I think it's an interesting, test in your organisation to look at the workarounds. You might have created some sort of business intelligence or a corporate performance management initiative that sets standards. The litmus test, if you like, of whether this particular issue is a problem is how many workarounds are there? Are managers having to spend a great deal of time or are encouraged or allowed to find alternative means of getting that? Have they got their, 48 different spreadsheets around the side of that to deal with what they believe to be the real numbers? Clearly you have a problem. That may be in the sense of data quality, that they don't believe it, but it may be organisational in the sense that they want to be able to manipulate data and deal with their own set of numbers. It's just the fact that, generally speaking, that middle management isn't interested in one version of the truth. They're interested in their version of the truth. It requires, you know, some level of autocratic behaviour, frankly, from senior management to say, you know, to impose disciplines around where data comes from. That if a middle manager or a senior manager, for that manager, is presenting data, that its provenance be known, that it be derived from corporate resources rather than spreadsheets. You know, it's important to try and expose hidden agendas from managers in terms of how they see and use information. So, again, there are some tactical issues there. You know, some organisations just forbid the use of spreadsheets in terms of formal reporting and management meetings and so forth, and say that, you know, that the only information that's relevant, if it's in a spreadsheet, and we've seen, you know, some CEOs do this, one example in particular, said that if it's in a spreadsheet, it's just your opinion. I only want to know about information that you can prove, you know, and show me have come up from, you know, in a proper hierarchical sense, up from the standard corporate information systems. Another tactic, you know, is to make sure that you take away all the arguments about quality of data. So you might have to focus on a proper data warehouse infrastructure. We see some people doing this and, you know, retreating back to that, which is, you know, a pretty good starting point, and making sure that, you know, you can establish with some level of credibility that the data that you are rolling up to these guys is appropriate. It may require you also to think about rebuilding the business case, and saying that, you know, if the management culture and such at a middle management level is such that, you know, they're not simply prepared to take information out of the standard, you know, BI tools and cease using spreadsheets, that there isn't an effective business case to go forward. So there's some techniques there. Okay. Next point, next fatal flaw, slide 7, data quality. We don't have one. For some reason, nobody gets really wildly excited about data quality, but, you know, we can sum it up with garbage in, garbage out. We find that many organisations make a great deal of assumptions about data quality, you know, about the accuracy of it and so forth, and our advice generally is don't make those assumptions. You know, do you really understand the level of accuracy of the source data? Do you understand, you know, how they're putting it in, where they're getting it from, the timeliness of it and so forth? I'm sure many of you have been on the receiving end from data that's been generated out of corporate databases, particularly from a customer point of view, and you get a sense of how inaccurate a lot of that data is. You know, so the learning point here is simply don't make that assumption. There's a certain flippancy here about, you know, the sign that your boss doesn't like you is that you're made responsible for data quality. The fact is it's really important, but it's hard to get excited about it. In a manufacturing environment, it's interesting because things like inventory accuracy and bills of material accuracy and so forth are regarded as a critical business issue. And part of the selling process that IT needs to go through from a data quality perspective is to really keep pressing home to the business that the responsibility for data quality at the initial input of it is a business issue. It's not an IT issue. That businesses are, it is actually a key responsibility of the business units to ensure that the data they put into it. That's implicit in that, though, is the fact that information and data is seen as a corporate asset issue rather than a necessary evil. So, you know, as the slide says, denial is the real problem here. And the problem with poor data quality is that it's a waste of time and money, but probably more importantly, it allows users to find excuses not to to use the results of your initiatives from a BI point of view. Okay, so if we go to slide 8, titled What Data Quality Problems, we know the consequences. Garbage in, garbage out. There's obviously a qualitative issue from the business point of view. As I mentioned before, you know, it creates a lack of trust. It means that users don't use it. And again, you know, symptomatic of that is I need to do stuff around. I need to work around the BI situation. I need to work around the BI platform. I need to work around the BI tools because it's not delivering right information because I know what's right and those figures aren't right. So it's pretty fundamental. And we have certainly seen fairly significant BI initiatives fail just because, data quality is so poor, or at least perceived to be so poor, that end users have simply no belief or sense of reality about the what's presented to them. So it's a very tedious issue. As I said, nobody gets excited about it, but it's something that just has to be dealt with. And again, from an IT point of view, but it's really important to push responsibility for that, albeit with, you know, helping them understand how they do it, but to make sure that there is a business responsibility for ensuring that the stuff they put in is accurate. And better generally to have less information that's accurate than a comprehensive corporate-wide set of data that is of debatable quality. So volume is not the issue, quality is. Okay, if we go to next slide, please, which is slide 9. So how do we deal with this? Okay, ideal. As I said before, data quality is a business issue. You need to push responsibility back. We see some organisations putting in almost like a data quality firewall, not dissimilar to a security firewall. In other words, deliberately focus and look at controls to cleanse the data and keep it clean. As I said momentarily ago, better to have, a more limited amount of data that is really good and is unarguably accurate and produces unarguably correct metrics and indicators that managers cannot help but deal with as they are, rather than have much more data that provides a possibility of inaccuracy. In terms of a practical sense, understand, measure. Understand in terms of, is there a difference, for example, in the banking environment? Are the foreign exchange source systems, what's their data quality compared to the data quality coming out of core banking systems or retail banking versus investment banking versus wholesale banking. So really, try to, without, boiling the ocean, but understand the metrics around data quality in terms of the source systems, in terms of particular business units. Is one business unit producing poorer data than another business unit? Is a particular source system producing more or less accurate information than another? Provide some metrics and look at some metrics. We've looked at a process called heat maps. In other words, where are the hot spots of clearly poor data? And there's usually a combination of a business unit or a section of a particular business process or a particular source system or some combination thereof, that has a particular level of data quality associated with it. In terms of looking at BI initiatives, particularly for those starting out, perhaps that's maybe a key element in terms of identifying where you start. If you found a situation where there is good quality coming out of a particular business unit, it's coming good quality coming out of a particular data source system, that might be a good place to start an initiative as opposed to an area where there's poor data quality. So you need to know what you're dealing with from a data quality perspective. And you need to measure it and understand progress in terms of, is a particular unit or a source system getting better at what they're doing. You can't do it all at once. You clearly can't boil the ocean, so understand what you're dealing with. Okay, next slide. Fatal flaw number 4. which is slide 10. Our enterprise application vendor will deliver the best solution. It's cheap. You know, we spent $20 million on the the ERP system, and we've got a BI tools and a data warehouse associated with it. It's an attractive proposition. The business is saying, well, you know, we've spent this. Why do we need to spend any more money? We have the tools associated with it. Data warehouse is a data warehouse. It's free. It's integrated, whatever that means. So, therefore, it's easy. We get asked this question a lot of times. As many of you understand, you have some of the major ERP packages often, or enterprise applications in some form. They often have and usually have some form of BI capability, often with a data warehouse. You usually have other applications associated with your particular operations or vertical industry, and what do you do about it? There's no simple answer. It's not a situation of saying, well, we get 50% of our data lies in the ERP data warehouse, the other 50% lies in our core banking systems, for example. Therefore, we should go for a non-ERP data warehouse. There's a lot of research and help around that, but it's really trying to understand the issue is not what the right answer is. The issue is making sure that you don't automatically go for the enterprise application solution. That's not to suggest that that may not be the right answer in many cases, but what we're saying in particular in relation to this is you need to make a conscious decision about the appropriate technology required for your environment. That this notion of, gee, it's free or it's cheap, only applies to the license. We're not going to go into a lot of, dwell on the total cost of BI initiatives here, but if you're talking about an enterprise-wide BI initiative, the cost of the license is just about the smallest component compared to the cost of professional services, of integration, of change management, of business process re-engineering, of data cleansing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in terms of the overall project. So don't get caught up on the license issue. Examine it with much more sort of rigor than simply, well, it's apparently easy. It may or may not be easy. It almost certainly won't be necessarily cheaper. So you need to really evaluate if you have an enterprise application, that is significant, that has BIDW capabilities, you need to evaluate it properly, against a best-of-breed solution. So, again, it may seem trite to do this, but it's an area where, probably represents about 30% of our inquiries in the BIDW space about, do we go with the enterprise apps vendor or with something else. You can't do it casually, and you shouldn't make any assumptions about it being easier or cheaper, essentially is what we're saying. So if you go to the next slide, which is slide 11, you're going to have to deal with the enterprise application data warehouse. It's a significant part of it. It may represent more than 50% of your data, but you have to plan and architect involving it. Also, the assumption is that, notwithstanding the claims of vendors, we never see an enterprise that doesn't have other applications other than their packaged EA enterprise application. So the whole issue of integration and how you deal with that is something that has to be thought about sensibly. And again, as I said before, you really need to compare the enterprise application BI front end with a market leading best of breed type BI vendor. Make a conscious effort. Don't make assumptions is really the issue here. And in terms from a tactical perspective, it also goes to the heart of whether you really have a BI strategy, have a corporate strategy, or whether you're simply looking at something almost like reporting on steroids, so that if the perception of BI in the organisation is that it's fundamentally an issue of simply extracting data out of ERP or whatever, plus a bit extra, then there will obviously be, you know, an emphasis on well, let's go with the ERP vendor. But which tends to be a fairly tactical approach to BI. But given where, you know, if you understand where the different sorts of information lie in your organisation and what's really critical to managers, it may well be that that the information required is a combination of from lots of other sources. And again, back to our sort of general position, which is that BI is more than simply an issue of reporting on steroids. It's an issue of, you know, how the organisation as a whole creates, manages and uses data and turns it into information that's of relevance both from an internal perspective and in terms of how you engage with the external world. Okay. Right. Moving a little bit faster now, slide 12, which is point number four, fatal flaw. Darwin's wrong. BI does not need to involve. BI is somewhat different from a lot of applications that you might have done. It's not only about an internal perspective, but it's also, you know, as much about how your organisation engages internally. But the more critical issue is that because of that, it's not static. It's not a situation where you can define your BI requirements in the beginning of 2007 and be comfortable that the information types that you need, the information sources, the delivery vehicle is going to be the same a year later. So it's really quite different from accounting systems, from ERP, arguably from even sort of core transactional systems in some environments. So you have to assume a level of constant change that's driven both from an internal management perspective and from an external point of view. So it's actually much harder to deal with. But you can't, there's no point in pretending otherwise. You just have to deal with the fact that, you know, what you do is going to require constant change. Now, you've got two approaches to deal with that. You can say, you know, we're going to do a bunch of quick and dirty BI projects. We're not going to try and deal with it strategically. We'll do a short project, get some results, then do another one. And we do see some organisations doing this, and that has the benefit of having, you know, an apparently quick ROI. But what we tend to see with that is that it tends to proliferate just a whole bunch of tactical solutions. So our position, as you would have seen in our research, and we keep urging our clients, is that, you know, like if you accept that business intelligence is a core corporate competency that you need from a competitive perspective, then you have to think about the architecture of business intelligence and data warehousing, and how you create an architecture that deals with the reality of constant change. It's a bit like building a house. You can build a two-bedroom house, and then when another child comes along, add another bedroom, and then build a whole bunch of stuff off the back of that when a third child, and then somebody gets married, and you decide you want to do something else, and you keep adding things on. As opposed to, you know, thinking about how can you create an environment and a framework and an architecture that deals with constant change. So that's the first issue. There's also IT, you've always got to balance this issue about user requirements. You know, we see users come to IT and say, I want a report that looks just like that, but with, you know, new stuff around it. And, you know, users are often bound or limited, frankly, by, you know, their past experience. That old report may simply reflect the limitations of an old accounting system. I mean, who knows? So it's a, you know, part of IT's responsibility from our perspective is to really, you know, get users when they're talking about BI, when they're talking about corporate performance management, they're talking about reporting, is to really help them drill down and say, okay, what's the type of decision that you're trying to make? What's the nature of the decision that you would like to make? What's the nature of the business process here? And can we inject a piece of information into that process that would help it be more efficient? So we're seeing in successful BI the need to drill down much more analytically and understand the real purpose of that piece of information, rather than simply trying to replicate what used to be, because what used to be often, you know, simply represents historical limitations that are irrelevant. So in trying to understand user requirements, you've got to be very careful not to simply, you know, take user requirements as given and then add 10%. Okay. Move on to slide 14, and I'll just go through this reasonably quickly now. Slide 13 here, which is what we're trying to find here, and what we're seeing here is that we describe this whole process for BI in this slide, and you can have a look at it. But it's an activity, not a project. I talked a little bit about the Business Intelligence Competence Center. What we have here, though, is if you think about gears in a car, on the right-hand side of that circle, you've got the more strategic process, which is defining the project, identifying data, evaluating tools, developing discovery, etc. That construct process is much, much slower than the consume process on the left. And so that when thinking about this is that the consumption, which is essentially the user end of it, change is happening. It happens really, really quickly. That left-hand side happens much, you know, cycles much faster than the right-hand side. So you have to be conscious about, as I said before, about how you deal with the fact that the left-hand side is much more variable, rapidly moving than the right-hand side is, because you can't do things like that you need to on the right-hand side that quickly. You can't evaluate tools, you can't develop, you can't implement, define and so forth as quickly as business requirements change. So if you think about the nature of gearing, you know, in a car, is that you need a mechanism and a process. And our view of that is it's through primarily the implementation of a Business Intelligence Competence Center that you manage that. Okay. Moving along, slide 14. We can outsource the whole darn thing. And again, symptomatic of that, BI, yeah, it's just another application. We're going to do that. Or it's really hard. So let's outsource it. There's all sorts of reasons why people do this. You know, my mess for less. I think the problem with that, with outsourcing BI, is that if you accept that BI, from a user perspective, should be something that is being constantly reevaluated and requiring change to respond to different business requirements, outsourcing projects and the nature of an outsourcing relationship is put under stress where you have rapidly changing environments. And so that if you look onto the next slide, slide 15, you'll see at least some attempt from our perspective to say, well, okay, it may make sense to look at the stack, in terms of outsourcing infrastructure. But the further you move up the stack from a BI point of view, from a framework point of view, and that BI framework on the right is the Gartner BI framework, the further your requirements move up there, or those particular parts of it, our perspective is that the less susceptible they are to outsourcing. And if you believe that BI competency is a proper organizational competency, then you have to think selectively about outsourcing. So to net this all out, our perspective is that outsourcing BI is not something that you do in an end-to-end sense, but you be sensibly selective about it and understand, you know, what value, where your skills are, where you can create competitive differentiation, where you want to have skills in-house and so forth. So, and it's important, as we've indicated there on the left-hand side, that you have service-level agreements that are built on change, not stability. And the reason for that is that purely from a financial perspective, outsourcers like stability because it's cheaper and more economically efficient to do that. Change is fundamentally bad because it costs money and therefore they have to ask money of you. So understand what particular, with some level of granularity, what particular elements of your BI are appropriate for outsourcing and what's not. Okay, moving on to slide 16, which is just give me a dashboard. Some of you may have been old enough to have gone through the decision support system cycle and enterprise information systems and the manager who says, just give me one page, you know, I don't care about all the stuff below it, just give me, three numbers on a page every week. Then you give it to them, and what will any good manager do? They want to understand where the numbers come from. Dashboards are the outcome. Good dashboards are just an inevitable outcome of good business intelligence. If you've got the right infrastructure, you have the right data and the right sort of hierarchies and so forth, then in one sense, dashboards come for free. So we are clearly advising against the notion of implementing some form of dashboard process where you don't have the underlying stuff sorted out. So what we see, frankly, is it could be just another version of the truth. It's often unintegrated. Sometimes there's no ability to drill down. There's no coherency to it. And again, if you move to slide 17, it should be the icing on the cake. If you've done the warehouse properly, if you've done the rules, you've defined the hierarchies, it's clearly the quality is good and so forth, then a dashboard that has the right metrics is an inevitable outcome of it. And again, I'm sure most of you have quality managers at a senior level. They need to drill down. And so they need to be comfortable that the data is... has integrity below that it's consistent across the organisation. So just be cautious about implementing dashboards per se. And to summarise, it's not a perfect world. Everybody's been there, done stuff, dumb stuff, learned from mistakes. Again, you would have hopefully got a sense from this presentation that, our perspective is that the BI has enormous potential from an enterprise-wide perspective. It is really about leveraging a great deal of investment that you've made in underlying assets. So the question is how to do it properly and do it well. So I think we're open for questions now. I'm happy to extend the time for those of you who have questions beyond this. My apologies for going a little over.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name or number to be announced. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, it's *1 on your telephone. There appear to be no questions at this time, sir. Actually, we do now have a question from Site 87. Please go ahead.
Just one responsibility said about the data definition is with the business.
Yes.
What you understand from the system development lifecycle, the definition with the business, but the architecture of data mapping and other things lies with the IT.
Of course.
Is it the right approach, or it is something you suggest differently?
Well, I mean, things like the issue of the business, and you cannot ask the business to define architecture. It's inappropriate for them. But they have to. There's two primarily responsibilities of the business. They have to clearly understand what information they need to drive what decisions and how those decisions relate to their roles and the overall business strategy. And they have a responsibility of understanding that and communicating that effectively, to IT. And they also have responsibility for the derivation of business benefit. But the underlying technology and architecture is not something that the business has responsibility for.
Yeah, that's good. So what do you think about the role of the data dictionary manager?
I'm sorry, the what?
Data dictionary manager, data dictionary. See, such a large systems, like we have around 200 plus systems running, including
yep.
the ERP, portals, CRM, OSS, BSS, there are layer systems. It's a large volume of the data, like 700 terabytes overall.
Right.
So in that case, the same object is referred into different applications in different way.
Yes.
And we face the problem of the synonyms and the redefinition of the data. So in that case, what do you suggest to be a best architecture in that case?
The best architecture in that case. Look, it's way too complex a question to answer on the fly. I'm happy to take an inquiry about that, to be honest, because it's something that requires more thought.
Okay.
Your next question today comes from site number 3. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Neil. It's David Smoot from Melbourne Water. We've just, we're coming to the completion of what's been our toe in the water with business intelligence and data warehousing, which has been around corporate performance management and corporate reporting. And been fairly well received just with using stock standard SQL tools and the like, nothing terribly complex. But we're now casting about the organisation to look for the low-hanging fruit and where winners are going to be in this space. And we've managed to piece together a fairly cohesive business intelligence competency centre, and they're pretty keen to continue to keep going.
Right.
What sort of criteria might you use in trying to identify what a good candidate for a BI project would be?
If you're looking for this to be a let me put a marketing hat on and in this sense and say it's nice to have something that has visibility in the organisation, to be too crude about it. So if you've got something that has good high visibility and has good bones, and what I mean by good bones is where you're comfortable about the quality of the data sources.
Yep.
Well,
never comfortable about that.
Less uncomfortable, put it that way.
Looking for places to add value.
Yeah, look at and where it's also where there's an externality involved. In other words, people are always more interested in a project which has a competitive impact,
mm-hmm.
or has a customer impact, rather than an internal efficiency perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the point I made about marketing, because you want this project to lead to other ones, So. They're fairly obvious ones, to be honest, is quality of data, external impact versus internal impact, and where you've got, you've got, the most relevant senior business person on board about it.
Yep. Great, thank you.
Okay.
Your next question today comes from site number 70. Please go ahead.
Hi, it's Mike Welsh from News Limited. I was just interested in the concept of the competency centre and just your thoughts on where you think that should be driven from and who should own that. And I'm specifically thinking of the business versus IT relationship.
Yeah, look, I mean, in practical terms, it's going to have to be driven by IT generally.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, IT are the people who end up sort of carrying the bucket, carrying the can.
Yep.
But it has to be jointly owned. So the selling of the notion of a BICC, the the perhaps the logistics in terms of setting it up and managing it, I think in practical terms, you know, I'm more likely to come from IT, if only for the reason that, that IT has a cross-enterprise perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas you might engage initially one particular business unit with IT as a starting point into a competency centre. So I think almost by default, IT has a responsibility for making it happen. But in terms of, but that's very different from ownership.
Yeah.
If you don't have, in respect of a particular initiative, true ownership by the business, or at worst, a joint ownership, then you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Your next question today comes from site number 4. Please go ahead.
Hi, Neil. Jeremy Gregson from CRS. You referred some slides back to the concept of a data quality firewall.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give any examples of how organizations have put that in place?
It's essentially, and again, it's getting a little out of my technical area, but it's essentially putting in a data sheriff, and like all those activities, there's an overhead associated with that. And again, so I'd rather take a formal inquiry about that, if that's okay, so I can get some proper response to you.
Okay. The prompt for the question was the term firewall, and I realise you don't mean it in the mechanical sense.
No.
It gives the impression of something which stops bad data going in the...
No, you know as well as I do, that's not that simple.
Yeah, it's... data quality really...
It's more about a process... what I was really referring to, is more about it, mate, you know, is A, understanding that that needs to be some sort of process there for saying, okay, we're getting all this data in, how do we add... what can we do to filter out the bad stuff?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
At this time, sir, there are no further questions. Please continue.
Okay. If there are no more questions, thank you very much for your time, and I apologise for going a little bit over time. And if you have any queries, then please direct them or further thoughts, and happy to hear them and try and deal with them. So thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.